All right, we're going to get started. I'm Stuart Meyerberg. I'm with the information, with the immunization information support branch at CDC. Thanks for coming to our discussion of IIS interoperability. I've been asked to remind you to fill out your session evaluation if you're seeking continuing education credit, and to also fill out your general conference evaluation. So we have three speakers today. First up is Rob Savage. He is a senior information technologist with Northrop Grumman, and he supports IISSB. He's going to start by telling us a little bit about the history of immunization information system interoperability and how it has evolved. So
we're good. Okay.
And also, please hold your questions for Rob until the end.
So basically, my talk is really going to talk about one of the great, I think, public health success stories out there right now in the interoperability world. What Stuart said, I'm a Northrop Grumman contractor, and I support the Immunization Information System Support Branch. I am also the lead author on the implementation guide for immunization messaging using version 2.51. I'm on the American Immunization Registry Association board and co-chair of their standards and interoperability. So my goals for the day, sort of be able to describe three of the factors that support interoperability, some reasons why it's important to engage the broader public health community in standards utilization and implementation, look at some of the strategies that have been successful for us in engaging the public health community, and describe resources that are needed to support a community of practice, which is one of the important factors in my mind. For my talk, we're going to talk a little bit about immunization information systems. I see some familiar faces out there that could probably do a better job talking about it than I can, and they will tell me what I tell you wrong. So that's okay. We're also going to talk about the evolution in the IIS world of data exchange and how meaningful use, our goal in the immunization information system world is to move from meaningful use to meaningful communication, which means where data is actually transmitted between one system and another. And how did this vision from IISSB encourage the success of this whole process? First of all, what are immunization information systems? I think I stole this from either ERA or the CDC website, but basically they're confidential, population-based, computerized information systems designed to collect information about all persons within a geographic area. Sometimes this is limited by age, but in many cases now it is not. And they exist in several different kinds of configurations. Probably the most common is a freestanding operation, IIS. Some are engaging in it with HIEs or other regional information hubs. Where do they exist? Well, they exist in 49 states in the District of Columbia, 8 U.S. territories. This is based on research done by CDC in 2010 December. 89% of children under the age of 6 are in an IIS in the U.S. So pretty good coverage there. Why are they important? One of the important things that they do is they consolidate all the information about immunizations for a person. I don't know if any of you have ever had to go out there and look for immunization records for somebody, but you can have some over in the public health clinic and some in a private clinic, and they may or may not overlap. They may only be billing records, so that basically one of the big goals of IIS is to consolidate those histories. They are important in supporting public health immunization goals. They allow you to know whether somebody has their immunizations or not. They allow you to make assessments and say, for our community, for this particular neighborhood, for this particular type of person, we are doing a good job, or there's a lot of people that need stuff. They also prevent over-immunization. I was helping the state of Wisconsin many years ago do a little thing where they were looking at the immunization for hepatitis B in the adolescent population in the juvenile prisons. And one of the things that we discovered was that prior to the Wisconsin Immunization Registry coming online, it was very common to end up with extra immunizations, because when you walked into Lincoln Hills School, the boys' juvenile prison, they would look at you, and if they didn't have an immunization record, you got a hepatitis B shot that day, and then you got the next one a month later, and probably about 2 or 3 months later, they'd finally track your record down, and guess what? You already had those. As soon as WERA, as it's called, went online and they started using it, dropped off to nothing. So they also support population-based analysis, as we discussed a little bit earlier. And this is another good reason why it's important to have consolidated records, and I want to thank my colleagues from Wisconsin. This is a slide that Dan Hofsenberger and Tom Meritz have shown a zillion times, and it really tells the whole story. Every one of those green dots is somebody who got an immunization from the Dane County Health Department in Wisconsin, and Dane County is the big dark green blob down here. But you'll see all over the entire state there are people that have gotten a shot from Dane County. So why do we need it in the state? So that anywhere you go, that record's available. The success factors for IIS, what makes them successful? If they have accurate and complete immunization histories for each person, then somebody's going to want to bother to go look and see if Rob Savage has had all his shots. If they are accurate, complete population-based registry of the people in their catchment area, then they're going to be useful to public health and others for making sure that coverage is good. It's also important that immunization history be accessible at the point of care. If I have to walk out of my clinic room and go to the front desk and log into some system and find the immunizations, that's just not going to work. And the other thing that's really important for success is the ability for them to exchange data with other health information systems. If I have to enter it in my EHR and then I have to enter it in my IIS for the state, guess what? Probably not going to happen in a very timely fashion. So when it comes to messaging, one of the things that's really important to get a handle on is what's involved here. And basically you have senders. And in this case, we're talking about this. I stole this slide from one of Eric's presentations, but I think it's very nice. It tells you what has to happen. Basically, you have to prepare the message. You have to extract that data from your system. You have to put it in a format that is going to be usable on the other end. You have to connect that system through the transport layer, and we're going to actually have a nice presentation by Eric on that. One of the big well, I'll get to that. That's on another slide. Then you have to parse the message when you get it on the other side. You process it, and you prepare a response. Typically, you say, thank you, I got it, it looks good, or what did you send me? I don't have a clue what this means. And that response goes back, again, through the transport layer. So the pieces that HL7, the piece that we're going to talk about in a minute, or any other thing really talk about, are the prepare the message and the parse the message. So a data exchange history. This goes way back because there have been immunization information systems, although they were called immunization registries a long time ago. And many of them basically had locally defined flat file formats. Some had many flat file formats within the same state. This is great, except that, you know, when I want to send something to somebody in Philadelphia or New York City or Wisconsin, guess what? Everybody's data structures are different, and the formats are different. They may not have the same value sets. And in addition, there's really no ability for me to say, I want Rob Savage's record. Please send it to me so I can look at it while I'm talking to him here in the office. The IIS community and CDC determined that one standard was really important so that we could all have a common way to put things together where an EHR could prepare a message that could go from them to the state of Wisconsin or to the state of Oregon, wherever. And part of that is to come up with a standard structure for formatting the data, and another part is to come up with a standard vocabulary. If I have my vaccines described with some local freehand text, one, I can tell you that there are going to be lots of ways that people are going to enter that same immunization. And two, it's not comparable across the board. So we really need to have a standardized vocabulary. And at that time, HL7 was chosen as the preferred standard. It's an existing international standard. It's been around for a long time, back into the, I think, late 80s, and it's stood the test of time. It's a consensus-based, which is a painful process, but it ends up with a messaging structure or another structure that people can live with across the board. And I'm going to talk more about that now. HL7, or Health Level 7, describes the place that they are focusing on, which is basically the structure of the message, the content of the message, nothing else that you require like transport layer. It's an ANSI standard for clinical interoperability, and it was founded in 1987. See, my memory wasn't that bad. To promote communication between hospital data systems, typically in the beginning it was between the pharmacy department and the lab in the same hospital. And, of course, obviously you would think, well, I can talk to the hospital across the street as well. The goal was to be platform independent, so it doesn't matter if you're using Microsoft Access and I'm using Oracle and somebody else has got MySQL, it doesn't matter. The grammar for the messaging was developed, a standardized vocabulary was developed, and it continues to develop to today. And it is named as an ISO Open Standards Interconnection Reference Model Application Layer. Big bunch of words. I'm not even sure what that means, but I stole this slide from another HL7 presentation. Now, CDC worked a long time ago, back in when there were very few immunization registries. There were six that had gotten grant money from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and they got together with a CDC staff person named Susan Abernathy, and they worked to develop an implementation guide or a specification for how to use HL7 for immunization messaging. And that was published back in 1999. Now, CERSET merged into ERA, which we'll talk about in a minute. We'll talk more about that in a minute. So CDC organized the effort, coordinated the input from everybody. But again, what you're working with is this community of practices, fairly informal at the time and has gotten much more formal now. They also relied on HL7 to make sure that you weren't doing anything naughty with HL7. So, in terms of the implementation guide, the first one was published in 1999. It was based on HL7 version 2.3.1. We are now, 2.7 has been published or is in the process of being published, and there are ballot materials out this fall for version 2.8, so it's basically trying to improve and add new functionality. It has been implemented by, this messaging strategy has been implemented by many IIS and EHR vendors, and it really is a model of success for interoperability. There are thousands of messages a day that go back and forth between systems using this methodology. As 2009, 28 IISs reported the ability to accept an immunization history, which in HL7Es is a VXU message, or an unsolicited vaccination message. Experience showed success, and it also, as we would all expect, highlighted some problems. Some of the IIS receive immunizations from... So the successes are that some of the immunization information systems receive histories from most of the provider organizations in their catchment area. One of the problems is that the implementation guide left a lot to your decision. It was quite optional, some things. And the problem is that my state might decide you want to do this, and Frank's state might decide you want to do that. And the problem with that is not that Frank is right and I'm wrong, or the other way around. It's just that if you're going to talk to both of us, you have to build a system that talks to each of us. So, the other problem was that the query structure, the way that I asked for Frank's record, did not use some important data elements that we all know and use in our work today. So we decided that we needed to have a new implementation guide. The new implementation guide was published in May. CDC developed the guide to correct the problems. CDC provided staff support. We worked closely with our collaborator, the American Immunization Registry Association, which I'll talk about later. They're called ERA amongst ourselves. And we balloted it through the HL7 organization to make sure that we really were doing it correctly. And we also moved to version 2.5.1 because that cleared up a number of ambiguities or mistakes that were actually in the old 2.3.1 standard itself that we based it on. And in the end, we were between the success with 2.3.1 and this new implementation guide, Meaningful Use, selected this new implementation guide as one of the standards, the other being the previously published version 2.3.1. So, again, earlier I mentioned barriers to interoperability, and part of our talk today is going to talk a little bit about dealing with these. One are the transport layer differences. So I can connect with my shortwave, or I can connect with my cell phone, or I can connect with mail. I mean, those are allegorically different. But not everybody, in fact, many people have not actually rolled out 2.5.1 yet, although there are many who are, at the gate and ready to enter if they aren't there already. The other problem is that there are problems matching people. It's outside of HL7, but it's a barrier to actually being able to share data. Another thing is that there really isn't a common testing platform or way to say that my messages are good and Eric's are bad, or that both of us are right and they're just different. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Ruchi is going to talk a little bit about a CDC effort that helps us out there. And the other problem, which is that there are differences in state policies. And some of these do not have anything to do with reading a message, writing the message. What they have to do with is what must be in my message versus what must be in your message, and what can't be in my message, but it has to be in your message. And it's a issue that we will not deal with today, but one that we all have to acknowledge. So basically, one of the ways that CDC worked on some of these problems was to use some of this ERA high-tech funding to attack some of these barriers to interoperability. 20 projects were selected, and these basically, again, have staff resources, and the approach is to bring together subject matter experts, both technical, clinical, and business, and to bring them in from the IIS and the EHR side and get them to attack one problem at a time and come up with a solution. And one of those will be the story that Eric tells later on Transport Layer. We also provide technical support to IISs. So all of the IISs out there, I think everybody in this room who I know of as IIS has called me with a question about what does it mean when on page 27 in the implementation guide when it says, or I really need to be able to do this, where do I put that in the HL7 message? The other thing is that ERA is supported both financially and with technical support. The IIS initiatives, this is a slide I borrowed from somebody else, basically $21 million went out there to 20 immunization programs, and it provides support for this working to get interoperability. The states that got that are in blue here. You'll see that they're across the country. I can tell you that they represent many of the different flavors of IIS that are out there. There are more resources, which I am not aware of. I mean, Stuart might know who they are, but there is more grant money that's going out there shortly to others, again, to bring 2.5.1 up and running. Okay. Let me flip to my next thing to make sure I don't forget anything here. Okay. The IIS interoperability panels support transport layer technical assistance. They support implementation and technical assistance on the 2.5.1 guide. They provide ongoing technical assistance, and they're going to, one of the projects that just started is this dealing with client deduplication and matching, trying to identify some best practices for how to accomplish this, not for building a system that does it, but so what should I be doing as I get ready to run it through my magic black box, and what should I do once it comes out the other side of the magic black box. Again, this is another slide that says much the same thing. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to get a drink of water. Now, what are the accomplishments of these interoperability grants? Now, we already have had successful data exchange, and this has been going on for some time. And that's okay. I needed a musical accompaniment to my talk, you know, to sort of keep people engaged and awake here. Pretty soon we're going to sing again.
Show on NPR.
Yeah, exactly. There is increased participation of external health information systems. So all of these projects have been involved with various folks from the EHR community. The community of practice continues to be supported and engaged, and it's engaged in improving the implementation guide. One of the first real success stories was that this group of experts came together and agreed on a best practice common transport layer, which is a big deal if you're trying to sit there and talk to many different systems, as some of our partners do. And the project will continue for another year, again, providing technical support and working on deduplication. So this is really based on, I think, a vision that I would like to articulate that comes from the IISSB. And one of the ways that I think really others in the public health community can engage and be successful in their own communities. And one is to support a community of practice. And what does a community of practice lead to? It leads to a shared vision. You know, I have one vision in my head, and Emily over here has another, and Frank has another, and we sit down together and we work on problems, and when we do, we can come to understand each other's and realize we're really talking about the same thing. There's also a shared commitment. So when somebody's got an issue to deal with, one of the first things that typically happens is that an email goes out on error and says, I'm dealing with this problem. Has anybody else got it? And the other thing is that we come up with better solutions. We come up with solutions that are going to meet everybody's need, not just my need. And what do we do to make them thrive? They really need technical support. You know, everybody that belongs to these things, these communities of practice, has real day jobs. They have special needs of their own. They have special expertise, but you may need somebody who can really provide some technical assistance. Sometimes they need financial support. I mean, you really need to have somebody who can administer the organization. They need to include everybody, the public, the private sector, local, state, federal people, because each of us has our own needs and issues. You need to have a shared vision, and ERA has a vision of what their responsibility is. And we all need to work together and solve problems. And again, this membership helps each other out. So these are really key to what we think is important for accomplishing this. And our really good partner, boy, that's a great slide, isn't it? Probably because I did it on a Macintosh and this is a PC. No, I was blaming it on the PC. I have to tell you, I once went to do a presentation on a paper, and I'd done it on my PC, and I get to a college, and the college only has Macintosh. And this is probably 10, 15 years ago now. And I go through it, and they say, well, don't worry, PowerPoint works on Macintosh. It's just fine. And I go all the way through the whole thing, and I get to the slide with the results. It's blue background, and instead of being white text on blue background, it is navy text on a blue background. I mean, if it had been any other slide, it would have been fine. So at any rate, Macintosh and PC. But anyway, so the goal of ERA is to support and promote the development of and implementation of and interoperability of IIS through partnerships, peer and professional education and training, and resource development. You know, we have folks from ERA who sit on many other boards or many other organizations, and we try to make sure that the message from IIS gets carried across the board here. So, among the efforts that ERA and CDC have collaborated on are the NVAC, or National Vaccine Advisory Committee, core functions and data elements. What is it that an IIS should be able to do, and what kind of data should it be able to store and share? An important one that has been worked on is called MIRA, Modeling Immunization Registry Operational Work Group. I would love to know who comes up with these acronyms. And they're basically best practice chapters. What's the best way that we understand to identify what the client status is within the registry? Are they active? Are they inactive? Are they moved and gone away? Whatever. All these other topics. We've worked on the implementation guide on and off for years, and ERA and CDC both participate in the HL Standards Development Organization. Did I go too far? So what does it take to accomplish these goals? You need resources to administer the program, and that's like dollar signs. You need consistent effort by the partners. One of the great things about ERA is that even though everybody in ERA is overloaded and too busy, the people in ERA work really hard together to try to solve problems and to, you know, help each other out. You need leadership and support by local public health agencies. So some of the people in ERA represent state and local public health. You need that technical support, so people like Eric and I can be out there to provide that for it. You need to nurture this community of practice. And one of the most important things is you must be patient. It takes time for a group to work on something out and come up with a solution that is really going to be better than it would be if one person sat down and wrote it. And you need to trust each other. So we're going to hold questions for me to the end. And I think Ruchi will now come up and start talking.